Joining us is Patricia Smith, the president of Lyme Disease Association, a national nonprofit organization. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you very much.
First off, Pat, I want to ask, what is the purpose of your organization?
Our mission is Lyme and other tick-borne diseases research, education, prevention, and patient support. And basically what we do is that we do provide research grants, and we have for many decades, and those grants have enabled some projects to be published. We've had 53 journal articles on projects that we have helped to fund. And we also help to endow the Columbia Lyme and Tick-Borne Disease Research Center. And we also provide CME, which is Continuing Medical Education Credit, for physicians. And we usually have an annual conference. We just had our 20th, actually, last year. And we also have an interesting program called Lyme Aid for Kids, which is for parents whose children need to get diagnosed and or perhaps then treated, and they don't have the funds to begin the process, and they can apply for a grant through their physician, has to go through the physician that they're seeing to get monies to help them with that process.
Yeah. So it's all about educating the public, and of course that's not just the general public, but also I'm sure you have to advocate for others, and I'm sure you have to deal with some medical professionals and also with government bodies as well, right?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, because of the nature of Lyme disease, I've been called in to testify. I've testified in Pennsylvania a number of times over the years on bills for Lyme and other tick-borne diseases and other states. And I also actually sit on the Health and Human Services Tick-Borne Diseases Advisory Work Group down in Washington, D.C. And this is my second term in the working group. And what we do is we provide material to the government. We actually provide a report every 2 years for a total of 6 years of the life of the group. We provide a report to Congress as to what the recommendations are that the working group has to help patients with Lyme or to help prevent the disease and so on and so forth.
Yeah. It really seems to me that there have been more incidents of Lyme in recent years. Is this because that's what's actually happening, or is the public becoming better educated on what Lyme disease is?
Well, first let me mention the numbers a little bit, and if I may.
Yeah.
And for example, and I'm sure probably your listeners are aware of this, Pennsylvania has been number one in the nation with numbers of Lyme cases for quite a few years now. And basically in 2018, the last official numbers, they had a 10,208 reported cases in Pennsylvania. However, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that that's a vast underreporting of numbers.
Wow.
And so by that calculation, there were probably 102,080 cases in Pennsylvania just in 2018, which is a pretty staggering number.
Yeah.
And on the national level in 2018, there were 33,666 reported cases. But again, going by CDC's interpretation of what those numbers really mean, there were probably 336,660 cases of Lyme across the country. This is staggering.
Yeah.
And so have the cases increased over time? Absolutely they have. And some of the factors, and you mentioned a couple. Well, first of all, let's talk a little about what the ticks. The ticks now have known to spread to 50% of the counties in the United States. That means the ticks that carry Lyme disease.
Yeah.
And so there is certainly more awareness in other areas, for example, that didn't think they had Lyme disease, but that was because nobody was looking for those ticks or had found those ticks. There's certainly more awareness by the public, and I believe it's because, well, the numbers in general are up, but also because the media, I believe, has finally taken a real interest in reporting on it and realizing how many cases are actually out there.
Yeah.
Also, there's more awareness by some of the physicians now than there had been in the past about Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. And a lot of people think some of this is related to patterns of development. You know, we've changed our development pattern in this country over the decades where you're actually bringing the ticks into closer presence with people because you're putting houses in the woods, surrounding them with woods, or in some cases you're actually cutting all the wooded area down, but there might be fields or there might be other kinds of things that still are bringing small animals too close to homes. For example, people don't realize that chipmunks and the white-footed mouse, squirrels, other animals are actually the ones that are carrying the bacteria, and the ticks bite them, and then they might bite you or your family or your pets. And so all of these things probably have led to increased case numbers or increased awareness causing increased case numbers.
Right. And the region where you are talking to people right now, in central and western Pennsylvania, huge hunting and fishing population, and so much around these parts has been mentioned about the deer tick. And I'm certain that this time of year especially is pretty difficult. This is where they're pretty prevalent, right?
Yes, absolutely. And interesting about Pennsylvania is that the cases have seemed to take a long time to be, in my opinion, to be recognized out in your section of Pennsylvania. I mean, they've been recognized in the more eastern sections of Pennsylvania for a number of decades. But I don't know if it was resistance or just people were unknowledgeable about the disease that was out there. And I noticed that your county numbers in that region have gone up in the last several years. And of course, the hunters are at some of the highest risk because these ticks, the ones that cause most of the Lyme disease, which is the nymph stage, they are actually about the size of a poppy seed. And so people are oftentimes do not see them. Plus, hunters sometimes are reluctant to use different kinds of product because depending on what they're hunting, they don't want that scent to be able to be detected by the animal. So it makes them, again, at a lot higher risk of acquiring the disease.
Right.
But to be sure, and people should understand this, that they don't have to necessarily be a person who goes in the woods to get Lyme disease because the ticks are out there. Areas with very high grass, those are areas that ticks like to be in.
Mm-hmm.
If you, for example, mow down your lawn, you keep after it and you rake it up, you're probably less likely to have the ticks as close to your house because ticks get dehydrated when the sun is out and so on and so forth. They can't tolerate really being in that kind of environment. They need a dark, more wet environment to be in. So that's one way that people can help to protect themselves and their families by keeping their lawns maintained and keeping away the grass and also wood piles. That's very significant. They should keep wood piles away from their home because they harbor the chipmunks and the mice that are carrying this bacteria. And if you have children, for example, and let's say you're thinking about, well, we're going to put up a swing set in our yard. Where should we put that? Well, you should put that, if you can, away from shaded areas, away from wooded or fielded areas. It should be more in the sun area and a place where, you know, there's not a lot of grass and so on, high grass and stuff around it. So those are some kinds of things that people are looking at to help keep the tick populations down on their own properties.
Right. And I've learned a little bit about this, too, because I have my own personal experience with being bit by ticks, that Lyme is actually just one of many types of diseases that's carried by various ticks.
That is correct. Unfortunately, at this point in time, in the United States alone, we have about 20 different tick-borne diseases.
Wow, yeah.
And these are carried by probably about, well, depending on where you are in the country, mm-hmm. probably about 8 or so different ticks. In Pennsylvania, the majority of your diseases that you have are basically caused by 3 different ticks. The deer tick, which I think everybody kind of knows about that one.
Correct. Yeah.
Also the American dog tick and the Lone Star tick. Those are the 3 ticks in our regions, and in particular for you in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. that cause most of the different kinds of diseases. And many of them can be treated in the same way as Lyme can be treated, but others cannot be,
yeah.
and can be very serious. And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
By the way, before I say that,
yeah.
you should know that one tick bite can produce and give you more than one disease.
Wow.
So that's what makes the whole process very difficult. So if you're bitten by a deer tick, for example, you could get 4, 5 or even more diseases from that one tick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of those diseases that you can get out of that tick, I want to mention, even though it doesn't have right now, at least, that we know about, it's not, there's not a whole lot of it, but the case numbers are increasing. It's called Powassan virus. And Powassan virus, again, comes from can come from the bite of the same deer tick, and it has a reasonably high fatality rate.
Wow.
And so since it's a viral disease, so far, there are no treatments for it. There are currently tests for it. There weren't for a while, except from through the government. But now there are labs that have a test for it. So it's something that you have to really be careful, because those people who do survive the disease, 50% of them remain oftentimes with severe neurologic complications.
Wow. We're listening to the voice of Patricia Smith, president of the Lyme Disease Association, with some really good stuff to educate our community with in regard to Lyme disease. And I'm sure, Pat, that there are many who misunderstand a lot of things, and especially when you deal with a disease like this, that there are some controversies that go with those misunderstandings, too.
Even though Lyme disease has been around about 46 years now,
mm-hmm.
from when they first knew something was happening in Lyme, Connecticut, but didn't really know what exactly it was until now. And over that time period, there has been a huge controversy, and that, unfortunately, that controversy has prevented many people over time from being diagnosed and for being correctly treated for the disease.
Yeah.
So the basis of that is that Lyme disease can cause, in some people, symptoms that remain after they are treated. And so this is very problematic. And for many decades, patients, advocacy organizations, treating physicians, some researchers have said, hey, there's something more than meets the eye here. This is
right.
a chronic infection. And so now what's happened is research has actually shown, research from Johns Hopkins and Northeastern University and other places, that what happens is sometimes when you are treated for Lyme disease, you, with conventional treatment, which is usually 3 weeks or so of doxycycline,
mm-hmm.
but in maybe 20% of patients or more, these symptoms persist beyond that. So they found now that what happens is, it's called a spirochete. The bacteria that causes it is called a spirochete. So this spirochete can go into different shapes, and those shapes can affect what antibiotics may be used to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get treated and it seems like that you get better, you may get better, or maybe you'll get better for a period of time, and then what will happen is your immune system will get stressed by something else and your symptoms will come back. So they found that in the laboratory, that these cells, these bacterial cells can remain, some of them, they're called persister cells. And these persister cells, they're finding, can only be wiped out with other types of antibiotics. Mm-hmm. They can't necessarily be wiped out with the same antibiotic that they're using, the doxycycline that they're using to treat Lyme disease. So this is very problematic. And unfortunately, a great percent of the medical establishment and the government will not acknowledge that chronic Lyme disease exists.
Wow.
So there's this huge divide, and has been, and it's they call it the Lyme Wars.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are caught up in it, and it's why I have been involved now for 35 years in trying to rectify this and help it, and try to get the research, try to get the education, try to educate government officials and so on, to try to let this disease get the attention that it deserves. Because
right.
It's not just in this country, by the way. Lyme disease is found in 80 countries throughout the world now.
Right. Wow. It's interesting you bring that up, because in conversations about Lyme, you get all these differing ideas with the general public that it's something that, you know, after 2 or 3 weeks it's treated and it goes away, and other people say, oh, no, you know, once you're diagnosed, you have it for life, and which is probably the safer route to go. If you're diagnosed with Lyme, then this is something that you should tell a doctor every time that you visit a doctor.
Well, that is certainly the opinion of my association and
yeah.
many others and treating physicians. And the treating physicians, we call them the ones that actually treat long-term mm-hmm. for Lyme, and that's what needs to be done for people who have, oftentimes for people who have symptoms, that these docs feel they need to treat them, and people see a benefit, but we call them Lyme-literate physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And those physicians definitely are very knowledgeable about the science and about what is happening with the patient and mm-hmm. with different kinds of treatment modalities
yeah.
that might need to be given to the patient. So the bottom line answer, yes, you should, mm-hmm. but if your doctor is reluctant, they're not going to do anything about it, and that's the big part of the problem.
Yeah.
And that is why Pennsylvania has had a bill in for many years
mm-hmm.
for doctor protection. We've done doctor protection bills in various states. Pennsylvania has had one in. It's never gotten totally through, but it protects the physician's right to treat mm-hmm. patients if they need it. They get treated clinically
mm-hmm.
based on the doctor's judgment and what the doctor sees, and the tests are used as an adjunct. And by the way, the testing is not good at all. It's about 50% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're missing probably 50% of cases. They're mm-hmm. using the same technology as the tests that were adopted for this in 1994.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So this is horrifying,
yeah.
and it's one of the things that Lyme groups all over, including in Pennsylvania, are trying to change and trying to get new kinds of technologies. We have new technologies and testing for all different kinds of diseases. Yet again, we're like 40 some years into this disease,
mm-hmm.
and we don't even have a test that's accurate enough to pick up all the cases of Lyme disease
right.
that are out there.
If people listen to this conversation right now, Pat, they want to find out more information about your organization, the website, any information that's out there, what would you advise they do?
Go to our site, which is LymeDiseaseAssociation.org. That's all spelled out, LymeDiseaseAssociation.org. And on there, we have a YouTube channel. We have a Facebook page. We have a monthly newsletter they can sign up for. And most of the material on our site, we allow to be downloaded and used by people free. You can order brochures, printed brochures that we have, which have all of the diseases listed, the 20, and we have one called the Lymer Primer, and it very briefly goes into what those are, the ticks that carry and transmit them, the symptoms, and you can order them for a cost of a postage. You can order them, mm-hmm. I think you can order 200 of them at a time. And we also have a little tick card on there that you can carry in your wallet. You can order those, again, for postage. And we also have them as PDFs on our website. So if people want to download those just to have their own copy without ordering anything, they are allowed to do that. So we have a tremendous amount of material, also about the government issue that we talked about and mm-hmm. the controversy. That is on there, and prevention material is on there. We also have a nationwide doctor referral
mm-hmm.
That is on our website. We're almost ready to have our upgrade to that. It's, old technology, and we're upgrading, but it is there on the website.
It's a great website, and I should also mention also that the organization does seek donations as well, because research, education, very helpful, because this is also about prevention as well.
Thank you. And I would like to also add that 97% of the monies that come in go directly to programs, because we do not have employees. We don't have paid office space. We all do, the people that, work with us are either all volunteers, or we have a few consultants because of the technical areas that mm-hmm. we need consultants for. But we keep our administrative costs to a very bare minimum. So we're very proud of that. And our main thing is we need to stop these tick-borne diseases. We need to help the people that are already afflicted with them. And we are either patients or families of patients that started the organization, and some of us still here over the years with the organization.
That's awesome. Patricia Smith, President, Lyme Disease Association. Really enjoyed this conversation. I learned a great deal in 20 minutes. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.